It's the Ron Van Dam Show, and it's Halloween. And Trump's still in the White House. Oh my God. I'm even scared to set my clock back because it's Halloween. It's Friday the 13th, it's October 31st, I don't know. Things are pretty scary today. Pretty soon the children will be coming to your house to collect candy. Dressed in all kinds of strange outfits. It's odd to see little children dressed in bizarre, scary, disgusting costumes, collecting candy like paupers on some type of hellish holiday. What is this holiday, Halloween, celebrated all throughout the world? Why do we need to scare ourselves when there's plenty to be scared of every day? And who's that playing the piano? That's just what happens when you look in the mirror in the morning. Can you imagine the implications of this holiday? It's different than New Year's and Flag Day. It's Halloween. Scary feeling that you get when you leave the house without your cell phone, that empty, lost feeling. And then you return home and you put your cell phone on your person and you feel whole again. Well, it's that feeling of loss that is Halloween. It's that feeling where every pumpkin reminds you of Trump's face. Orange, carved out with a light inside that's dim. It's like the tooth fairy on steroids. You don't know what comes in the middle of the night, and what's left in the morning, or what's for dinner, or how to get that toilet flushed when it's stuffed up with toilet paper. These are the mysteries of life, because it's Halloween. Ouch. Every door that creaks, every light that flickers, is a reminder of this holiday. Where nothing makes sense. Similar to this program that you listen to every day. It makes no sense whatsoever. That's why this is my holiday. This is my holiday. Did I say that this was my holiday? It is my holiday. Thousands and millions of kids roaming the streets aimlessly, looking for handouts. It's wonderful. Then they get home and they eat all their candy and they get sick and they go to school the next day with belly aches and intestinal diseases. Be careful what you eat for dinner tonight, kids. Your mother could be trying to poison you. You don't know, because it's Halloween. Wow. That was so intense.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the scariest show ever.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. Hope that you stick with me through this entire extravaganza. It won't take long, I guarantee you. I'll have you back out in society in no time whatsoever. Just relax. Take it. Oh, yeah. Stretch. I was stretching. That's what happened. That strange sound that I made was because I was stretching my bones. It is Halloween. It is Halloween. It's the day that it's the children's holiday. It's very odd that a holiday that's set aside for children is scary, involved with blood and blood-curdling situations and death and destruction. I mean, this is a holiday for kids. What, are you kidding me? How did collecting candy become a holiday of horror? It's for the little children. What is that about? No wonder our society is messed up. We have a specific holiday for children to go around, collect candy, have little parties, things like that, you know, carve pumpkins, and somehow we've turned it into death, annihilating destruction, hands falling off, blood coming out of your face and your eye sockets, heads being chopped off, people screaming and being scared out of their wits. Hi, children. Enjoy your holiday. What the hell's going on? It's like Easter. It's like Jesus, like saying, hey, I've risen from the dead. Excuse me. Why are you paying so much attention to bunnies? It's just, what are we doing? What are we doing? What sense do we make out of anything anymore? But I don't know. If you watch television today, it's all going to be movies with people's body parts falling off and torture, and that's what you're going to see on television for the kids, of course, for the kids' holiday. Now, I live in Massachusetts, and I'm not looking for any awards for that or any congratulations or any applause on your part. I mean, Massachusetts is a fine place to live. It's no better than any other place. Well, actually, it is, but that's besides the point. It's just here in Massachusetts, there's a little town. I guess it's a city or town. I really don't know what it is. Salem, Massachusetts, which apparently are where all the witches were. This was like the witch capital of the world. Sounds like an Abbott and Costello routine. Which capital is it? I don't know. Which one is it? No, it's the witch capital. Yeah, I know. It's the witch capital. Which capital is it? Oh, come on, Lou and Bud. By the way, Abbott and Costello's first names were Lou and Bud, in case you missed that. I throw in some information here and there that means absolutely nothing anyway. They had the Salem witch trials here, which I think that was when Mueller handed down indictments against the witches. I don't know if you recall that. Actually, today might be Trump's scariest day of all. I don't even know if he celebrates Halloween, but this has got to be pretty scary for him. Many of the people that sat around his table during the Trump campaign to try to strategically win the election, many of these people have been indicted now. Three of them have been. One of them was indicted quite some time ago and probably has been cooperating with the Mueller investigation behind closed doors, including the possibility of actually wearing a wire, which means that some incredible evidence was probably received. Trump has got to be saying to himself one of two things, if not both. One, okay, these people were like on the campaign with me. I chose them, and they were dealing with this is bad for me. And the other thing is that Trump actually, you know, Trump didn't have a gigantic, didn't spend a lot of money. A lot of people were volunteers sitting around a table with him, colluding on how to win the election. Trump had his hand in everything at that point. And women, you know what I'm talking about. He had his hand in everything. Just the implications alone for those that aren't on his side are like, oh my God, oh my God. Trump has got to know in the back of his mind that they're steps away from him as far as something horrible happening. And, you know, when you're the chief of the country, when you're the commander in chief, you're supposed to take responsibility for everything that happens around you, all the people that you choose, all the conversations you have, all the directions you take. Trump blames everybody else for everything that happened. He's the opposite of everything. But this has got to be one freaking scary holiday for Trump. And thus, not good things for him right now. Talk about scary. You scared, Don? Are you scared? Maybe you should be. Maybe you should be. And the most interesting part of all of this is a timeline. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but apparently Trump knew all about the Clinton emails before the Clinton emails were known by anybody else, before they were even released by WikiLeaks. The reason he probably knew them was because of the collusion that was going on with Russia already that Trump probably knew about. And see, Trump's problem is that he verbalizes everything that he thinks. This is going to go down in history, kids. I guarantee you, I'll bet you $10. This is going to go down in history that Trump is basically taking himself down, not on purpose, but by the fact that he just is so emotionally unstable that he just, it's like he wears everything on his sleeve. He's got sleeves that are gigantic. Small hands, gigantic sleeves. A scary time for Donald Trump. Hey, Don. Don? All right. Anyway, coming up a little later in the program will be my dinner from last night. Coming up a little later in the program, we're going to speak to the author of Ghostland. Got to make it a theme day, right? The author of Ghostland is going to join us. It's a fascinating book. It's about ghosts and spirits. Do they really exist? What are some of the most haunted places in this country, certainly? One of them probably would be Salem, Massachusetts, which is not too far from me. Far enough, but not that far. We could also, for the kids, we could have somebody who created Candyland. I don't have that person here, but that would have been interesting. But I don't. I went the ghost route. So what's your problem? Is that a problem for you? Yes, it is the day the kids knock on the door. I have secured myself a large amount of individually wrapped candies that I will give to the kids when they come to the door. They will ring my doorbell like some type of odd encyclopedia salesman, or salesperson, sorry, and I will open the door and I will be obliged to say, "Oh, your costume, that's so cute." You're obliged to say it. You have to say something, you know. You can't say, "Oh, hi, here's some candy. Get the f off my lawn, will ya?" You can't do that. You can't do that. You got to be nice to the little kids. It's their holiday. I was a little kid once. I went trick-or-treating for years and years until I was like 42. And at a point, I didn't want candy anymore. When I turned like 42, I wanted things like lasagna or a sandwich or perhaps some eggplant parmesan, you know. My taste changed when I was trick-or-treating when I got older. Marijuana would have been great, although I'm not into that anymore. I've had my day and I'm done with that. It's called maturing. Anyway, and the kids are beautiful. Sometimes the kids are actually dressed in little political statements. Whenever there's a president, and there always seems to be one, one of the most popular costumes is whatever that president may be. I remember Clinton masks when Clinton was president. I remember Bush masks when Bush was president. I remember Obama masks when Obama was president. It will be very interesting to see the Trump kids show up. And I'm talking about Don Jr. And his brother, because I think they're still trick-or-treating, but not for candy anymore, for other things, for lawyer representation. Be quite interesting. I'm always concerned about the kids walking around in the dark. When I was trick-or-treating, when I was a little child, back in 1623, Columbus had just arrived a couple of hundred years earlier, and nothing had happened previous to that, really. I remember when I was a little kid, I don't know what all that meant. When I was trick-or-treating, I did it just before it got dark. We used to do it when it was dusk, when, you know, sunset was occurring. Because it was too dangerous to walk around at night. You could get hit by a car. You know, you have to wear fluorescent things and all that. And it's very, very dangerous. And with all the leaves, you can slip and fall down. And wet leaves, you know, in the Northeast, everything's wet and leafy. Sounds very sexual, doesn't it? How was she, Ron? Oh, she was wet and leafy. But now kids seem to be trick-or-treating like when it's really dark out. And you got to be so careful. I'm very concerned about kids tripping on my steps. I have two steps to come up to my front door. A little portico kind of thing. And I always say to the kids, interesting costume. And they don't really care that I said that. But again, you have to say that's part of the script. And you throw candy into their pillowcase or into their plastic pumpkin head. That's what they carry to collect the candy these days. And then they turn around and there's two steps immediately. And most of these kids have masks on. They can't see anything. You know, take nighttime, some slick, wet, leafy conditions, put a child out into those conditions and then put a mask on them so they can't see. That's Halloween. That's scary. So I always say to the kids, be careful. Be careful on the stairs. Be careful on the stairs. And immediately I sound like some type of old Fogarty or John Fogarty even. Like, hey, be careful on the stairs. If I fall down, I can break a hip. You be careful, kids, and get off my lawn. Get off my lawn, you little bastards. That's what they make me feel like.
Be careful on the steps. Oh, my God. Be careful on the steps.
It's weird. Their parents usually stand in the street. They don't want to come up to my door at all. I intimidate people. I'm tall. It's quite obvious that I'm standing there. I look like I could hurt you. So the parents tend to stay in the street. And I'm sure they're whispering to their kids just before they walk toward my front door. I'm sure the parents are whispering to the kids, "Now get the candy, don't talk to him, and leave quickly. We don't know if he's capable of anything. He could be dangerous." I'm sure that's what the parents are saying. Get your candy and then get the hell out of there. Now, when I was a little kid, we used to collect for UNICEF. We would collect pennies and small change for starving kids all across the world who had no milk or had no cows or something like that. I never understood it. It was the United Incorporated Children's Efficiency Fund. I really don't know what it was. Nowadays, with inflation, if they had UNICEF, you'd be collecting like 10, 20 bucks per house, which is also the only way to make money these days, Stu. It's like when you go to the malls and you see these quote-unquote homeless people standing on the traffic aisle and collecting money. I guarantee you, it's not for starving children across the world. Anyway, it is Halloween, and it is the time to be a little bit frightened about things. Believe me, this calendar year has done the trick for me. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to speak to our guests about haunted places.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hey, Colin, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Colin Dickey joins us now. He is an author, a historian. You can put a lot of titles on what he does. And there's a new book out called Ghostland, and it's an American history in haunted places. This is, you know, the past 10 years, there's been an onslaught of ghost shows on television. And, of course, we're coming up on Halloween here. And whether one believes in ghosts or spirits or not, there's nothing like a ghost story to just spellbound you.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think from an earliest age, I mean, I got into this topic because I grew up in San Jose, California, near the Winchester Mystery House,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, some of your listeners may know, this 161-room Victorian sprawling labyrinth of a house, and I used to go there when I was a kid and take tours and hear about how, you know, Sarah Winchester, the daughter-in-law, the guy who founded the Winchester Rifle Company, was haunted by anybody who'd ever been killed by a Winchester rifle, and I just absolutely fell in love with that story as a kid, and it really set the tone, I think, for a lot of my interest growing up.
Yeah. Do you yourself believe in spirits and ghosts?
I've certainly seen a lot of things I don't have a ready explanation mm-hmm. for. I think with the book, I tried to kind of, I figured that if I tried to convince believers that there were no ghosts, I would fail. And uh-huh. if I tried to convince skeptics that there were, I would fail at that too. So I decided to kind of sidestep that question. I think I'm more interested in that middle ground. I think so many of us are somewhere in the middle. You know, maybe we've seen or we've heard something that mm-hmm. we don't have a good explanation for, but we're not, you know, we're not out there with the EVP meters and the KG right. meters trying to, you know, track down a spook like Ghostbusters. So
yeah.
I like that middle ground. I like sort of asking kind of what these stories tell about ourselves, why we tell them, you know, and how they evolve over the years.
Yeah. Well, it's always fascinating when you're up against something you don't understand, and that's kind of the thesis of this whole thing. And in every corner of the country, and certainly worldwide, there are some pretty weird locations that seem to just contribute to this whole thing. And no matter where you live in this country, certainly there's a place nearby that has a reputation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing I started to realize, is that it's less about, you know, the supernatural, the paranormal, uh-huh. do ghosts exist, and it's more about how we tell these stories about these weird places, you know, the Winchester Mystery House, Salem, Massachusetts,
yeah.
the House of Seven Gables. You know, we tell these stories as a way of sort of making sense of these old buildings and how they sort of fit into a community and how a community kind of tries to understand its past a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, ghost stories are doing all these other kind of weird things in addition to just being a good story to give us a little scare on Halloween.
Oh, yeah, it goes way beyond that. I mean, I think when we were children, we all maybe took out a Ouija board. Maybe not so much these days. Maybe that's a generational thing. But you would always try to contact people and things like that. There was always that.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, you know, the interest in the paranormal, I mean, so much of that has to do with, you know, how we deal with mortality, how mm-hmm. we deal with death, and, you know, regardless of your religious beliefs, I think it's something that all of us
right.
spend a lot of time thinking about, and, you know, ghosts are, I mean, it can be a kind of fun way of approaching it, but I think it is in some ways a kind mm-hmm. of serious way in which we think about and try and process, you know, what happens after we're gone and what's happened to,
right.
to our loved ones.
That's very true. It's also a very interesting trip for the mind, because it is something that is unknown and you can't know it. So it's like standing in your house and hearing a sound coming from your kitchen, and you run downstairs and you don't know what it was, and something fell off the counter by itself. And your mind starts, A, maybe playing tricks on you, B, you start actually bringing it further than it was in your mind, and then I think it's the mind that creates these incredible journeys just from sounds and stories.
Yeah, oh, exactly. And I, one of the things I really love doing with this book and is thinking about all the different ways in which, you know, architecture can sort of, you know, set off these,
yeah
as you want to say, you know, maybe flight to fancy or whatever, you know, that how we move through buildings, how we move through mm-hmm. an old Victorian mansion or, a former mental hospital. I mean, these are places that right. activate the imagination in all these unexpected and strange ways. And I think sort of, Our relationship, particularly in America, our relationship to architecture is something we don't really think about, but I think has a real psychological impact on how we move through the world.
Yeah. So this book is actually taking us on a tour of some of these strange and unexplained situations.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to kind of spread out, you know, throughout the country. So I tried to mm-hmm. go from, you know, Salem, Massachusetts to Los Angeles mm-hmm. to New Orleans to Portland, Oregon, to Richmond, Virginia. You know, I tried to kind of keep as many different places as I could, and sort of see how, you know, a different community, how does the South mm-hmm. deal with ghosts in a way that's maybe different than, you know, California or,
right.
or New England or the
right.
or the Midwest or something.
Very interesting. Our studios here are about only 10 miles from the Lizzie Borden house in Fall River, Massachusetts. And, a crew and I spent like 2 days in there, slept in the room, you know, where the murder took place in the bedroom and downstairs in the parlor. Nothing happened, but there were some incredible stories, and yeah, my mind did have a good time in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had to put the kibosh on New England, because otherwise the entire book would have been
right.
off. I didn't get to Lizzie Borden. I went to Salem and Danvers, but I think you're right. I mean, even if you don't get some sort of blue
yes.
sort of glowing figure
right.
at the foot of your bed,
it doesn't,
you know,
matter.
It can still have an impact on you.
Yeah. Well, it is still history. I mean, whatever, I mean, these places did see an incredible amount of history and pain and whatever the case may be. I mean, that's history there.
Yeah, and I think what I found is that in a lot of places, ghost stories are a way of us, a way for us to process history in that we don't really have a ready vocabulary for
right.
just yet.
Yeah. Very interesting. So the book has been released?
Yeah, it's out in paperback this month, and yeah, it should be available wherever anybody buys books.
Great. New York Times Book Review says it's a great book. It's Ghostland and American History and Haunted Places, Colin Dickey. Very, very interesting. I'm glad you did this. I'm already halfway through it, and I'm enjoying it. So thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Let me ask before we leave, is there a website that further goes into the book and all that?
Yeah. My website, colindickey.com, is one place they can find out more
stuff.
Okay,
that's Colindickey. And great speaking to you.
Yeah, likewise.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, you too.
All right, Colin. Interesting stuff. I like it. I like that kind of stuff. That's about as scary as I want to get, you know what I'm saying? Someone's head doesn't have to be chopped off for me to be entertained. You know? I've said this before on the show. I don't go to scary movies. I don't go to these horror films where people get hacked up. I mean, that's not entertainment to me. That's horrible. Why should I be exposed to that type of insanity and put it in the category of entertainment? I don't get that. What kind of strange sickness do we have inside us that finds horror to be entertaining? I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess it's an adrenaline thing. But at my age, an adrenaline thing is not good. I pee enough as it is, okay? I pee enough as it is. And that's pretty scary. Going to the bathroom in the middle of the night? That's scary. Well, my time with you for today is over. Yeah, it's not that bad, don't worry about it. I'll be back again tomorrow with another show. I hope you join me then, anytime you want. Because we have a special bond that I can't describe, so I won't. Have a nice holiday.